unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot.
Welcome to Unwarranted Music Opinions, the show in which a bunch of music fans choose an album. We all listen to the selected albums over the course of a week, and we reconvene to discuss them, and hopefully it won't end in a murder, or probably, hopefully everyone will leave the production studio by the time the conversation is over. I'm Jacob Lindberg, I'm here with Brian Courtney.
Hey.
And Chaz Jenkins.
What up?
And we have a guest today in Wyatt Melton.
Hey.
And Wyatt, you can kick us off.
Am I where I'm supposed to be?
All right, so the album I chose was a self-titled album by the band Big Trouble. They were initially created just like 2 or 3 years ago by a famous composer named Ivan Trevino, probably one of the best marimba players on the face of the planet. His work has been featured nationally and even internationally at percussion conferences all around the world. And eventually one day, I guess he was just like, hey, you know what would be cool if we took vocals and electronics and put them over all this weird percussion stuff? Yeah, so that's it. The album was really, really different, and I thought you guys would like it, and it was musically interesting. That's why I chose it. So hit me, bruise me, beat me. Go ahead.
I thought this was a very interesting pick, and I'm glad you chose this instead of Weezer's Teal album. But immediately, you know, on the first track, Red, White, Blue, Orange, I thought that the very jazzy drumming and the marimbas, it was a very unique feel. And then when you get the vocals coming in over it, kind of like art pop, indie pop style melodies and vocals over this instrumentation, it was a very kind of unique sound that I hadn't really heard. The chorus, like the guitars in the chorus, is almost like math rocky. Mm-hmm. I thought it showed a ton of promise overall, just the whole album. And the production, I thought, was really good. I thought that you could really hear everything that was going on. It had this live sound, especially, as you mentioned, with the percussion. But I do feel that they do lean into their influences a little bit too much when it comes to the back half of the album.
Do you like the first half better than
that? Oh, yeah. I think the first track and the last track are the best. And the last track is actually a Sufjan Stevens cover, but I do think they make it their own with the instrumental palette. There's a really nice little guitar melody that comes in.
Honestly, I think the best part is the last three tracks, 3, 4, and 5. Ariel, Ghost Arms, and Redford. I really loved those three in a row. I thought that that's when the album really started to pick
when
up.
When Ariel came on, I thought, is that you, Tom York? Because his vocals and vocal style and the electronics, I felt like I was listening to Tom York. I thought I was listening to The Eraser or like an In Rainbows era or Moonshaped Pool, rather, era like Radiohead song.
To be fair, though, the marimbas are what set it apart from that.
That's true. But
I've never heard anything.
The electronics and vocals, it just felt, I was like, all right, this is super Radiohead. But
very
true. Again, it wasn't bad. It had an interesting sort of unique atmosphere with the instrumentals.
Personally, I absolutely loved this record. And a lot of it had to do with the marimba playing. I've never heard anything quite like this before. And the more I listened to it, I was like, wow, this is so cool. Because at first I thought that was just keyboard. But is that like actual physical marimbas he's playing on?
Yeah. So take a piano and hit it with a mallet. And that's basically what a marimba is.
You're not wrong.
But so they're like, hey, these chords sound good on a piano. And they were like, oh, wait. We have a world-famous marimba composer in our lineup. Let's do this.
It is pretty ambitious. I think it's cool. I think it's, as a sound, it's cool. My issue is really with execution. I don't know. I get a bad type of sensory overload from the first track. Like, I feel like there's a lot going on, and it's not so much that they couldn't decide what to do. I just don't like the sound, if I'm being honest. I don't like the way the marimba sound against the track. It's like a sore thumb, the way they stick out. You know what I mean? At first, it was like, this is kind of interesting. How much is going on here? I like that. But the more I picked each element apart, I just couldn't find one that I really enjoyed all that much. And I feel that way about the marimbas pretty much across the record. And the third track, I believe, Ariel, does that have the male vocalist?
Yeah, that's the first track with the male vocalist.
I could not. I texted Jacob about this. He didn't hear this, so maybe it's just me. I really hated the mix on this thing. The vocals sound like they're at the back of my earlobe. They sound super out of place, like in the channel. And then also they're like way above the instrumentation. I basically, like, the vocals drown out any chance of me hearing, like, the instrumentation on that song. I don't know why, in my multiple listens, I couldn't get past that. But I, that being said, those are pretty much my only major criticisms. I think there's nothing here that's that substantive for me. But otherwise, I mean, it's pretty clean. I like the male vocals for the most part, except for on Ariel. And I think the female vocalist is very good, too. And I like the idea of the album. It's certainly unique. Like, I can't think of a piece that's universally praised or enjoyed that has marimbas in it. So I think that's a cool thing that they should keep doing, because I would gladly come back to a new project of theirs. I just think this one, for me, just wasn't for me in particular. I had a couple of big issues that I couldn't get past.
Honestly, I disagree all with what Brian was saying. I think if the marimbas were taken out of this project, then it would just be...
Well, I'm not saying take them out. I'm just saying, you know...
I think that's the best part of the project,
though.
I
agree with that.
Because, like I said before, I've never heard anything quite like this. And if you were to take that different sort of style out of it, it would just be your run-of-the-mill, you know, we're going to put some reverb on our vocals, indie pop, just, you know, stuff we've heard before. But the marimbas, when that first track hits, you're like, wow, this is new, this is different. I hope that this just leads to more of this style, and I hope they build upon it, because there's a lot of potential here. Don't really notice the mixing problem. I thought the production throughout the whole thing was pretty decent.
It seems to be completely isolated on me. I couldn't get past it either. Every time that track comes on, I'm like, what is going, like, I don't know. I can't explain it, because
you
guys
should check your EQ.
Maybe. I don't know. I just
did you normalize it before you listened?
Oh my God.
Oh God, we're such nerds.
Yeah,
to go off what Chaz was saying about the marimbas adding that unique element, I don't feel like they were tacked on. I felt like the compositions, instead of, you know, writing these melodies, writing these compositions, and then throwing marimbas on top, I didn't feel like that's what happened. I felt like you had the marimbas, you had what they were doing, and then the songs were written around them, to the point where there is, I think the instrumentation does come together and it's very cohesive, and I feel like these songs sound like the marimbas are an integral part of them, and that they really just wouldn't sound or feel the same at all without them. I felt like it was very admirable to see a new band come out with an EP with such a unique statement and such a, I wouldn't say fully realized, but not underdeveloped sort of unique style.
They clearly had a vision when they were making
right,
this
EP.
Right,
and I do think they achieve it, especially with the first track. The second track is pretty cool, too. And I do think that across the board, they have a pretty solid grasp on dynamics. I felt like there were a lot of parts throughout the album or the EP that I really enjoyed, where you'd have some of the instrumentation drop out, and then you might have just the drumming and just the marimbas for just a few seconds, and then things would come back in. There were quiet moments that would contrast with louder moments. And that's something that I always really enjoy in songwriting and song structure. I find that it keeps things really interesting. And for that point, my least favorite track is the one with the least amount of different instrumentation and dynamics, and that would be Ghost Arms. It's got a solid marimba melody, but again, I feel like I'm listening to like a Radiohead B-side.
I get the big bang of that as well, but like I think the marimbas on that and the second track are where I really do enjoy them. Like I've really only talked about my least favorite things. I do agree with you guys that like they have a clear idea of what they want to do, and I think that you can't take the marimbas away for this thing, or it would be terrible.
No, I would disagree with that fully.
It would bore me. It would be
run of the mill. It wouldn't be anything interesting about it to stand out amongst the crowd.
Yeah, I more so mean that. I guess it wouldn't be the worst thing I've ever heard, but like I do like that they incorporated the marimbas, because on the tracks where it does pay off, it's like, hey, this would be pretty cool. You know what I mean? Like, imagine if you had a great song, or a song that I thought was great that like came out with this instrument on it, because you don't really hear that. So,
are they planning to release an album anytime soon?
There hasn't been any clear announcement, but it is highly likely they could play at a PASIC. That's where they debuted Red, White, Blue, Orange and Echo Chamber, which is the Percussive Arts Society International Conference held in Indy in Texas. It varies year to year, but it's very, very likely they could do something like that again and release new tracks.
I would like to hear more. Despite all my complaints, if they released another one, I would probably check it out just based on curiosity alone. I don't think they made like a, I don't even really think they made a bad EP with this thing. I just have a lot of reservations about the sound, but I do like that they're trying for it. It is interesting and it is good on some parts of the album.
See, Jacob, it's interesting that you mentioned that Ghost Arms was your least favorite because it sounded really Radiohead. Maybe I haven't listened to enough Radiohead.
I think that it relies on the vocals the most out of everything else because it's so minimal. There's less of interesting instrumentation. It puts the vocals more at the forefront, and I just can't get into the male vocals. It sounds so much like Thom Yorke.
I
prefer the female vocalist.
I honestly haven't listened to enough Radiohead because I never got that vibe.
I felt like
whatsoever.
I was listening to a Thom Yorke solo record when that song came.
Because honestly, my favorite tracks are Ghost Arms and Redford. I thought that was a great moment in the album. And from Ariel leading into that, the first two tracks are fine, but for me, the album really picks up on those last three. Maybe it's just like I like the melodies more on those tracks. I think Red, White, Blue, and Orange and Echo Chamber are a little too dense musically for my taste because there's like a lot going on, especially with the marimbas. I'm not saying I don't like it. I actually really do enjoy it. I just think for me personally, it's in the last half where it really starts to blend well for me to really enjoy it.
Maybe it's because of the subtlety, like in the last three tracks, like especially in Ghost Arms where it's just vocals and marimba. It's just, it's all really almost lo-fi-ish minus the electronics. Do you guys get that vibe too, or is that just a me thing?
I wouldn't say any of this is lo-fi. I mean, it clearly there was a lot of production going into this. You know, everything sounds really clean and really, but maybe you're using lo-fi in a different term that I would normally use it.
Yeah, sorry, that was you mean.
I would call it minimal. It's minimal. Right. It's stripped back. It's
that's
skeletal. I like those elements of that track of Ghost Arm, but I do agree. And I wish there were maybe more. I know this is probably not their appeal, and I'm probably looking for something entirely wrong here, but like I would like to see song topics that are actually kind of gripping as well. You know, like I like the big instrumentation too, but I could maybe get behind the first track more if there were maybe something to grab onto lyrically.
Yeah, honestly, my biggest complaint about this album is that lyrically it's kind of just meh. Mm-hmm. There's not really singing about anything. There's nothing really gripping here.
What would you say if there were no vocals?
Instrumentally, this would be pretty outstanding. I think the vocals add to it sonically.
Like, let's say you take the vocals out of every track here.
I think this would be a pretty outstanding
EP. I still think it would be interesting because it would still be, that's the main draw of the album for me is the instrumentals.
Like the marimbas, they're like the most clear thing defining this release. I like the vocals and I like how they sound and they add to it musically, but again, that's kind of upsetting when they're not really saying anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe Wyatt
disagrees. It's kind of just wallpaper with the music.
Yeah, and I feel like if they really try to, like you said, have some interesting song topics and maybe add to that, this would be even better than it was, than I think it is right now. And I think I would score much higher with it, too, if that were the case. But as it stands, you know, it's great. It just, it has so much potential. And I really think that once they release their full-length EP, or LP, sorry, I think all of our issues with it will be recognized. Because that's what the point of an EP is.
Yeah, I do think that they are making a pretty solid mission statement for the band with this EP. And like Chaz said, there's so much potential with this sound here. God, because right now, I mean, indie pop and quote-unquote art pop is so oversaturated. And it seems like everybody is just doing this, we're incorporating psychedelic influences. Look at us, we're so unique. And it's even like blending into like trap rap, but this, I do think, is a pretty unique take on the two genres that I mentioned. And I would definitely like to see where they're going to go from here because, you know, this is just a baseline for what they could do with this sound. They could incorporate a lot of other things into this. They could, you know, get even more ambitious. And if they decided to do that, if they really went for it, they could make something really, really cool. And I'll be keeping an eye out to see what they release in the future.
I would put this thing at like a decent to strong 5. I think it's pretty okay. There's a couple of big issues that hold it back for me. But that being said, you know, even if I maybe am being harsh on this thing, I would check out their new stuff. I think the marimbas are a cool idea. I just don't like the execution on this album in most cases.
I'm going to go with like a decent 6 on this thing. I thought that it had a lot of potential. I didn't think that potential was always fully realized. But I think that there is a lot of interesting stuff going on here and a unique sound, and I'll be paying attention to the Big Trouble going forward.
I'm feeling an 8 on this EP. I really enjoyed it. I think the three last tracks are much better than the first two, but I did enjoy the first two tracks, and it's not higher for me because just lyrically it just seems like, let's just make sure that the lyrics fit the melody, but we really didn't put any thought into the lyrics. But again, it makes me really interested to see more from this band, and I definitely will be checking out once they release their first full-length LP, because I think the potential here is too much to not want to see where they go from here. But as it stands, I really enjoyed what I listened to, and the murmurs were incredibly surprising. And take the murmurs out, this would be like more where the guys stand, but the murmurs added so much to this for me that I thoroughly was enjoying myself while listening to this EP.
I'd say a 7 just because it wasn't the LP yet. I did have some issues digesting the lyrics because they just, as figurative as they were, especially in Red, White, Blue, Orange and Echo Chamber and stuff, it was just super hard to put together, like as to meaning and clarification. For now, I'll stand there and we'll see when the LP gets released.
The album I've chose is The Man Machine by the founding fathers of electronic music, Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk is a German electronic band. Have been releasing stuff since the 60s. The Man Machine came out in 1978. So yeah, pretty much their style of music has never been done before when they were coming out with this type of music. And honestly, any type of electronic music we would have since then would probably be vastly different if these guys never joined together and started releasing music. The Man Machine is their 7th studio album, so they've been, even since this album came out, they've been doing their music for quite a while. This album is considered one of their best records of all their library. You know, each album has its own style and distinct sound, so it really just depends on what you're looking for. This is my personal favorite. I got into Kraftwerk through my dad. This is a band that he listened to as a youth, and he gave me a couple CDs, and The Man Machine was one of them. And
sick.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Let's talk about it.
This thing's pretty slick. Like, I gotta say, like, pretty...
This is slick.
Yeah, like, I really enjoy it.
Is it slick, though?
It's slick. It's slick. I had a hard time actually holding on to it. yeah, it's really good.
You don't sound very enthused.
I'm kind of thinking.
It was really good. It was my favorite
This
album
is great.
It's really, really good.
And yeah. I didn't think I was going to come here and say it was great, because I had heard The Man Machine before a few years ago. You know, I've been familiar with Kraftwerk, and I've always felt that it was not quite as good as the albums that came before it and after it, being Trans-Europe Express and Computer World. I've always thought that the repeating kind of krautrock-esque rhythms on Trans-Europe Express were a little more cold and mechanical and had that appeal to them that this album didn't quite have. And I felt that Computer World was a little poppier, dancier, catchier. I enjoyed that about that album. And I felt like this album didn't quite have either of those things. However, in listening to this album for the podcast, I realized that it had an appeal that was different than both of those. And I shouldn't have been comparing it to those albums so much. This album is very repetitive, and the songs here can go on for, you know, 5, 6, maybe even 9 minutes in one case. But however, the 9-minute track, I think, Neon Lights, is the best song on this album, because these repetitive, kind of spacey, synthy, electronic tracks, at a certain point, I've just stopped thinking about song structure, and I stopped. I don't know, like, they just became alluring in a different way, and I sort of became enveloped in the sound and all of these, again, just spacey and strange science fiction worlds that they have created here. And I think, and this is a running theme for me for whatever reason, it clicked when I was listening to it in the car. I said this for Primus. It's true of like a few of the albums that we've talked about, but like listening to it, blasting it in the car, kind of gave a new appreciation for the soundscapes that they were able to create and just kind of like the driving grooves on this thing.
I wouldn't call it like hypnotic or anything. It's kind of weird how these beats are so good because like they're not hypnotic. They are very, very, very repetitive. The first 40 seconds is pretty much the whole song each time. And that's insane.
And I love it.
It's insane that this thing is good. I would put it down to the production and the what was hopefully a meticulous process to pick out each and every one of these instrumentals. Because, like, We Are the Robots is irritating on first listen. But the more you hear
it... First listen, it's amazing.
The more Yeah, we've heard the song.
I love it.
The more you hear it, like, the more it grows on you. And, like, the vocal passage, like, becomes, like, a nice, you know, it pulls you back into the track when you maybe are spacing out a little bit. And I like you can kind of space out to this album and still really enjoy it. But it's I wouldn't call it wallpaper or anything like that. It's still really engaging, and the beats here are pretty intricate. Metropolis is my favorite track. I love the minute and a half like lead in, that huge like synth that leads in for almost 2 minutes, and then you get like the synths in each channel that are kind of doing their own thing, plus the vocal like riff on those things. I love the vocal effects on this album. Neon Lights is actually probably my least favorite track, just because I love the vocal effects add such a nice texture to these tracks.
I think the best moment on that for vocals is Space Lab. I love the
weird, like, Space Lab. Oh.
I'm not sure if the way you did that, Chaz, is the way it
that is not at all
sounds.
How it sounds.
Well, I can't just automatically make my voice, you know, an
you
effect.
Can. You can. You edit the show. There's an effect.
Can you please do that again, Chaz?
Yeah, do it again.
Space Lab.
That's closer.
That, I to don't the even know what that is.
That's well, he's got the meter right. You know what I mean? It's like Space Lab, but you're looking for like space. Like it's like that.
Wyatt, what do you think?
Yeah.
Here we go. So
he hates it.
Oh no, Wyatt.
No. Hear me out. I don't hate it. The repetitiveness got to me over time. As I was listening to it for the first time, I was like, oh, cool. Like Brian was talking about, like the first 40 seconds. I was like, oh yeah, that 40 seconds was really good. And I got to the rest of the track, and I was just like,
first listen, you get to Metropolis, you're like, album's looking long. It's like a long runtime.
It's like I've been
it's
here
only
for
36 minutes though.
Long 36 minutes
it's
the
like,
first
I've
time.
I've been here for 10 years.
Yep. I felt that way a little bit.
Dang,
too.
Dang, Wyatt's got jokes too. I'm never gonna live this.
Truth be told, I really did like the sound of the album. Just the repetitiveness. That was really the deal breaker for me. Was just they had a good sound. The effects were super super cool. Neon Mice, right? Was a
Neon room. Lights.
Lights.
You fake fan.
Neon Mice.
Cut it out. No.
Do not cut that.
But Neon Lights was it was a really good track. Like it was long, but as like you got to that point in the album was the point where I was like, I can kind of get into this now. But it was until the very last track where I was like, oh, cool, it's the same 40 seconds over and over and over.
I thoroughly disagree with this complaint because it does not just repeat over and over and over. It's not looping. They're playing their songs. And there are little moments, if you're listening, that they do to switch it up from time to time. The only track where it actually does loop a bunch is Neon Lights. And it's in the second half, and it literally just loops over and over. Then they kind of bring it back in to end it. That is my least favorite part of the track or of the album because it actually loops. The other songs, though, it's all real. It's all being played.
So they're playing those live.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes it way more.
These are analog synths.
Wow. Yeah.
Like,
he's
actually
that.
Drumming on like a drum pad. It's not just some loop they made on like a keyboard or something.
Okay. So they're playing those same things live, and they're making small changes as they go.
See, these guys were creating electronic music, so it's not like they had soundboards or computers to do this. They had keyboards, drum pads. They had to make the music, make their beats, make their loops, because they were literally creating this genre of music, right. Which makes that spectacular when you think about, Neon Lights, how they play that for so long and keep it so rhythmic and meticulous, like it's actual robots playing it.
What year was this album made?
1978.
Yeah, that is a very good point, and you can definitely link that style and that sound to all the experimental music that was going on in Germany at the time. Kraftwerk started as a krautrock band, and a lot of that genre is repetitive. It has a lot of really interesting beat work and loops, and then they add a lot of weird stuff going on.
That's one of my favorite things about the album is just the huge krautrock influence. Now, I didn't know
they were a krautrock band before
previously.
They got into. They were, you know, they just had loved... that electronic influence, but they were, you know, like a rock band at first.
I just love the way they spin it on electronic music, because you get this with like house, you know what I mean, looping beats and stuff. But this feels more. I would never describe like any house album I've heard as like, oh, this kind of reminds me of krautrock. Huge krautrock bang on this thing.
I mean, this is like krautrock turning into synth pop.
Yeah, it's synth.
Look at the model.
I was
it's
trying
like
to think
three
of
and
like,
a half minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first synth pop song ever? Because look at it. I mean, it's got like a catchy verse. It's got like a catchy chorus. It doesn't have, you know, the typical synth pop vocal style.
We don't get synth pop
like
till maybe the mid 80s.
I mean, you don't
is
get
that right?
I mean, the early 80s maybe, but this is still like 70s synth pop. I mean, it's clearly like I don't even really think there's much of an argument against it being synth pop.
I would no. Why would
it's
you?
Totally
that is a, that is not a hill to die on. Like, this is absolutely synth pop. It's kind of mind blowing to think about it now.
And these are the guys that made that. We wouldn't have bands like. We've talked about the Magnetic Fields if it wasn't for this group making music like that. These guys are literally founding fathers of an entire, you know, genre.
And it's worth mentioning also the influence that Kraftwerk had on hip-hop and all of the different sampling and looping and just early 80s, mid-80s kind of the hip-hop scene. Definitely influenced by electronic music and all of the way that they composed and the way that they put songs together was kind of a major influence in that regard.
See, this is great because not only there are so many elements that go into when we're talking about these albums, like, because we're forcing each other to listen to them and then doing a show on a weekly basis. So it's kind of like sometimes you don't want to listen. There's stuff like that that affects it. So there are a lot of elements outside of just the music or the personal attachment to the albums for the people who are going to be listening to what you picked. But what's cool is when we get on the show, we can recontextualize stuff and add so much more to it. Because knowing all that now, it's like you hear the music completely differently. Because you're like, you know, you're hearing Kraftwerk, you know, I wouldn't say in a vacuum, but with a limited experience, a limited amount of knowledge and, you know, knowledge that you don't have. So you're listening and you're like, hey, this is pretty cool. This is pretty great. But learning where it's from, what it influences and what it means, like how it was made more is like it just adds so much more stock to the album in your head. And it makes you want to go back and listen again.
So talk about some of my favorite tracks. I wouldn't call Neon Lights my least.
I have a huge dispute. How is that your favorite track?
The melody is super, super nice. It sounds beautiful. The instrumentation is just very lovely. It's one of the moments on the album. It maybe is the only moment on the album where it isn't really trying to do this robotic science fiction kind of style. It feels maybe the most human out of every track here, and you get that without the vocal effects added onto the vocals. You know, it just sounded like a nice, I don't know, like a flowery field, but all the colors are neon. You know what I mean? Like it was just very comfy, and I thought that the instrumentation was, and this is the appeal for the entirety of the album, but these repetitive grooves that they have going on, what makes them worth it and what makes Neon Lights worth it for its over 9 minute runtime is how fantastically this instrumentation comes together and all of the extremely well-written melodic lines that they give to the synths and that they give to the vocals. And, you know, I listened to this album a few years ago before the podcast. My complaints were very similar to Wyatt's complaints in it being repetitive. Listening to it for the podcast, the repetitiveness kind of It just doesn't bother me anymore for whatever reason. I think it does have to do with how well put together these songs are.
Wyatt, what's your favorite track on this thing? Did you say Neon Lights earlier?
Yeah, you know, before I screwed up the name. Yeah, Neon Lights.
Would you say it's for the same reasons as Jacob? Or I'll ask you this. What was your least favorite track?
If you say The Robots, I'm going to strangle you.
He's going to say Robots because that's a tough one to swallow at first, but it's still great. Like, I think it's great.
No comment.
Okay, well...
You plead the fifth, you smart bastard.
Coward.
Okay, talk about some of my favorite tracks. I vibe so much with The Robots. Just love that intro, that riff, and I love the vocal effects on that. Space Lab, Metropolis, and the model.
Oh, Space Lab.
Space Lab is so amazing. I think Metropolis is, like, the best track on the album.
Oh, God! Yes! God, Chaz, you've agreed. Sometimes you come through, man.
Because just Metropolis.
Oh,
it's so catchy.
And it has the best. That's my least favorite track.
And it has
oh,
the.
No.
I know, I understand. And I can understand why.
Why?
I found that the melody was not as good as the other tracks and that it didn't justify its length quite as much.
What are you talking about?
Brian, you moved 5 feet away from me.
You're wrong.
That's a wrong opinion, you're Mr. wrong. Lindbergh.
No way. The melody on this one is awesome. It has the most diversity of any instrument on the album. It's right in the middle.
God bless diversity on this album.
It's
what?
It's
he doesn't say much, but he knows what to say at the right time.
It's a perfect breakup right in the middle of the album because you're getting a lot of looping on here. We Are the Robots, Space Lab.
Remember, it's not looping.
It's beat loops. I'm calling it a loop. I know they're playing it live. Don't get offended when I call it a loop because I'm not inherently saying it's bad because it's a looping. That's a stupid take on any era of music. However, like I just love that Metropolis comes in and it gives you the weird, you know, in both channels it's kind of doing different things. There may be subtle changes on the other tracks I didn't catch, though, to be fair, having talked about it some more. But I don't know, and I just love the vocal melody on that thing a lot. Like, I loved that one the most for me, just keeps me so ingrained in the track, as if the instrumental didn't already. Like, that track is awesome, man. I love that track.
And it leads into a great, like, halfway point for the album with the Model, because the Model is, like, the most poppiest song on the bunch. It has, like, a chorus, verse, a solo in the middle of it, like a keyboard solo, which...
Yeah. It's a really good song.
Awesome.
That is... I would call either the Man Machine, the closer, or... No, you know what? Actually, I wouldn't put the Model even
And the
close
Man
to
Machine
favorite.
Is a great closer, though. A great closer to the sound. And it's like, it's a great period on the entire experience as a whole. And I love it so much. I love like how choppy the keyboards are through the whole thing. But Neon Lights is a great song. I just, if it didn't repeat in that second half, it was shorter, didn't repeat, this would be a perfect album.
Yeah, I can't see, I'm sorry, I just can't see the justification for the like 8 or 9 minute runtime.
It's magical. That's the justification.
And we don't have to explain it. God, strong 9.
Wow.
I love this album so much, and it would literally be a 10 if not for that one complaint.
It's really, really, first of all, this is the best use of your rating system so far. This one makes the most sense to me. But.
You fixed it.
Talking about it, like, more and learning some context to it made me like it a lot more, and I realize now how much I did enjoy it while it was on, especially the more I listened to it. Just
these melodies are so catchy, and each one is so distinct.
Yeah, exactly, and the songs are set apart too, which is a huge part of why this album is so good, because a lot of the sounds, you're getting a very simple aesthetic, and there's very little change-up in terms of that aesthetic. You know, we get a lot of, you know, it's very electronic, very repetitive. The vocals across the whole thing are pretty much, you know, we have this one thing we're saying to kind of keep the track hooked in, except for the Model and Neon Lights, maybe, that break that up a little bit more. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's still really great, honestly. Like, and the more we talked about it and contextualize it and learning, you know, how groundbreaking it was for the time and how it's gone on to influence a lot of synth pop I've liked, I would be remiss if I didn't give this thing, like, a decent 8. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty great. And considering... How much talking about it makes me want to go back to it. Yeah, I mean, it's really, really good. And honestly, you should do another sequel episode for these guys.
I'm also going to go with an 8 on this thing. I wasn't expecting to. I was expecting like a light 7 because
I was coming in today on like a strong 7, but like the more we talked about it.
I think my main reasoning would be bringing it back to what Chaz said earlier about when you listen to this thing multiple times, you're getting these little extra flourishes. Like maybe it's just a changing... of the way a particular synth sounds. And it's the same melody, but they just change it how it sounds a little bit. Mm. Like, they are always adding in something. And it is very repetitive, but it never feels like it's lazy in that regard.
As we have talked about it, as much crap as I gave this album to, I'd definitely give it, like, I'd give it an 8. Just because I didn't take into consideration these guys were as previously mentioned several times, the forefathers of the electronica genre, that they were the pioneers of doing this kind of stuff. So I now have more respect for the album than I have in the past week.
The universe unfolds.
The artist I picked is Clarence Clarity, UK producer and songwriter. He self-produced this album we're talking about today, No Now, entirely on his own, completely made by him, which is amazing considering it's over an hour long and has tons of really dense material. The album samples itself throughout. The album actually samples songs that are coming up next on, so on No Now, he's sampling Cancer in the Water before Cancer in the Water plays on the album. So it's really quirky, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's got a lot of genres you could use to describe it. It's experimental, electronic. There's times where it's R&B influence. I think that's the heaviest influence on this whole thing and on the best tracks here as well. But I'll turn it over to you guys. I adore this thing, but it did take... I had to listen to this thing around 7 times before... I was liking it around my 4th or 5th, but like the next few listens, it really cemented it as one of my favorites of all time. Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty solid release that I've kind of grown to really like Brian's style. You know, it started with Death Grips. It was pretty rough. You know, after a while, it really started to pick up.
Talking about this really dense electronic sound.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A sensory overload, like a lot of weird noises.
Personally, I still think Veteran is the craziest one that I liked. Because Clarence Clarity, this album has a lot of like pop in it.
Yeah.
That's
like 2000s pop.
It's 2015, that surprised me. That I didn't know when this album came out. So when I saw 2015, I was like, wow, like this is pretty far out for this to come out that year. What I like about it most is just how balls to the walls it is with its All right, I should just get this complaint out of the way. What I don't like about this album. It feels so edgy. It feels so like...
Explain.
With Veteran, all that crazy sampling and it made me feel scared, but it felt personal. It felt genuine. This, to me, does not... some moments it really feels genuine, but sometimes it just feels like, ooh, I'm just going to be freaky and scary and like edgy just to get some... it seems shock value.
Well, do you have any moments in particular that stick out in
your particular...
head?
Well, okay... Two moments. One moment where it felt genuine, one moment where it felt completely edgelord. The moment where it felt genuine, help me find the track, because I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's near the end of it where it just starts, like, gets in crazier and crazier and starts, like, building up and then it ends. Does that sound familiar?
That's the very last track. That's,
where the end of one of the songs just starts going absolutely bonkers.
I know what you're talking about. It is the last track, because it loops into Become Death.
Okay, yeah, that... is
which
a great
is the
moment.
Opener.
That's a great moment. Where it feels edgelord is track 10. And you know which track I'm talking about. Where it just repeats,
I don't.
Kill, 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 kill.
Oh, the 23 seconds.
Where it's so low. Like, God, that to me...
It's not actually complete silence, yeah.
But that moment to me was so annoying because of just like, oh, look at me. I'm going to do something that's like so creepy and kooky. And I'm going to bring it all the way down so you have to hear. And it's going to be something like scary, like kill, kill, kill.
But
you know
like-
who was doing shit like that? Slipknot on their debut, their first track, they repeat some like edgelord phrase over and over and over, and then they lead into the song. I
did my time and I won out.
Yummy, thank you, Wyatt.
Yummy. Anyway,
but other than that, melodically, like sound, a lot of these songs are pretty boss, like pretty awesome.
I want to choke you because I don't hate when you say edgelord. I understand your complaint.
That's just what it made me feel.
I don't echo it, but I do understand it and I respect it. But, like, when she said she was moaning her own name, Chaz, and you say, like, I thought it was edgy when he had a 23-second track that is almost dead silent and him saying kill, 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 and it's like
weird. But come on. There's no deep about that. It's clearly just, like, shock value.
I wouldn't call either deep, but...
Well, yeah, you know.
I'm partly breaking your balls, but also, like, I do understand where you're coming from with that. I mean, that track is obviously not, like, it's a 23-second little interlude.
But why is it there? It adds nothing.
It fits in with the quirkiness of the album, in my opinion.
But it doesn't. I don't think so.
I skip it usually. I'm not here for that track.
And that's a problem. When you have to skip something, because
if you're skipping the 23 seconds of near silence, is it really that? But like, it's not grating. It's just happening.
It just feels forced. It really feels forced.
And I can understand that.
But
actually.
Other than that, this is a pretty awesome album with some great, like, very wild pop. And
how long did it take for the hooks to start standing out to you guys?
Right off the bat. It clicked right off the bat. There are some moments that are really freaky to me, like in a Veteran way, but the poppiness of the album helped kind of balance that.
Were you watching track to track as it went?
Yeah, and I was. And that helped too. That really
I was going to say, because I didn't the first few times.
There are some genuine moments where it just, if you weren't paying
attention,
you
have
no idea where you're in. Cancer in the Water is the best song on this, just because of how catchy.
What is your other two favorites, I would ask?
Other two favorites? Live in the Septic Tank's pretty boss.
God.
Let's see. Blood Barf's pretty awesome.
Blood Barf is really good.
My favorite moment, like, is from the cute to the end. That's my favorite moment.
Yeah, I think the cute is a really great, like, little kind of... Even though it's a little basic for the album, I think it's still really great.
And Will to Believe is pretty awesome, too.
Yes. But anyway, we've talked about this a lot. I kind of want to hear what the others think.
Yeah.
I want to start with Wyatt, actually. So, like, I just wanted, like, what was your, this is a super weird album. I don't imagine this is up your alley at all.
No, it's actually right up my alley.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
What'd you think about it?
It's honestly, out of the three, I love all of you, but this one was my favorite out of the
three
I listened to.
God! Two guests now have had amazing opinions.
Go on.
super avant-garde. Right off the bat, I was hooked. I mean, I listen to Big Trouble, Snarky Puppy, Jacob Collier, everything that's kind of all in whatever subgenre this is. I was really just hooked right off the bat because it was just, it was so not necessarily dense, but super, super unique.
Mm.
And even with all like the sampling and the random sounds at times, it was all pleasing to my ears, the entire listen. Favorite song, don't hate me for this, was probably that one.
Okay.
Tatha Gata.
23 Seconds of Silence.
That was your favorite song? What's wrong with you? You're mentally ill.
Hear me out. So, for me, it was a really artistic moment.
But do you think any of the songs on here are better than that?
That was just up there in moments. Cancer in the Water.
Cancer in the Water is my favorite.
I can't believe it. I really like that track, but like, I can't believe that someone's
lyrically, melody-wise, it just felt the most like
that wouldn't even
be. It felt the most like where he was really showing.
It felt genuine.
Yeah,
I
love the most genuine.
I do love the like gospel like vocal line.
And I love how the melody just bends a little bit, like, and gets distorted.
Ooh, yeah,
it adds so much to it.
It adds a lot of character to the song. I think like I wouldn't even put that in my top five.
I love how Cancer in the Water is like foreshadowed throughout the entirity of the album.
Yes.
And I think that part of the reason, like, I haven't listened to these songs like on their own. Like, I haven't been picking from tracks. I've listened to this album four times, and every time it was in the context of the album all the way through. And I think with all of this insanity that's going on throughout the entire thing, and then you just get this little, like, keyboard or organ melody or whatever it is, that just sampled and that just pops up every now and then. And when it finally comes in and you get the full song,
it's so satisfying.
It's incredibly satisfying. It's so earned. Mm. Like, he earns that climactic, what's the word I'm thinking of here?
It's the quietest moment on the album for a reason. It's all this buildup of all this craziness to finally take a breath. And it leads into that song.
And it's the song that sticks out the most in terms of, like, the most typical songs in here. Like, when I think of the most, in quotes, typical, I think of, like, Metal Hop and Traffic, whatever, and, you know, to a degree, Off My Grid, maybe the last half, you know, Those Who Can't Cheat. But, like, what sets it apart is it's no other song. Those songs are way more, like, R&B influenced. This, like, is, like, super singing. Like, it feels grand. Like,
it's
I agree with that.
It's cathartic.
Don't get
and
me wrong.
It's so earned. Like, it every emotion that is displayed throughout the album, and a lot of this album isn't very happy, really, emotionally.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Cancer in the Water is all that happy either. It's kind of dark.
The lyrics are hard to pick apart on
but
this
But it is cathartic. It's just this cathartic release that happens really near the end. It ties the whole thing together just beautifully. And I think this whole album is just put together as a flowing, full...
Yes.
Hour of music very, very well. You could choose individual tracks from this and they'd still be very catchy. They'd still be very unique. They'd still be just very well done. But every track in the context of the album is even better than it would be on its own. It feels like he really, really had in mind the album listening experience when he was putting this together, and he had this artistic intent and this artistic statement that he wants to make.
And for how crazy it is, for how outlandish the thing is, it flows incredibly well.
Yeah.
There's really no transition on here that's bad or
confusing. And
maybe
it's a little over long and at over an hour. Maybe that it could have used a bit of trimming.
I wanted more.
But, you know, despite that, that's kind of a minor complaint because of how consistently good it is. I don't think it's front-loaded. I don't think it's back-loaded. I think my favorites are pretty much spread throughout. Will to Believe is a great, catchy, and unique, technically opener. You know, the intro, Become Death, but it's really the first main song on the album. It has these relatively minimal verses. Meadow Hopping, Traffic Stopping, Death Splash.
Yes, God.
It's probably the
yes.
catchiest song in the whole album.
I love the hook on that one. Weird. Like, it's, and I love how like strange it is. It's like a very colorful kind of conspiracy song. Oh, man. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about
that
song.
And then Cancer in the Water. It's just... I think it's very, very admirable that, you know, this is his first album, and you said he made it all by himself.
Yeah, this is all him. Like, I'm looking at credits right now, written, produced by Clarence Clarity.
It makes it really, really impressive in a number of ways.
It's really mind-blowing.
It's clear this guy had an immense vision that he wanted to tell through his music, and it's
very difficult to pick apart as well, though. There are a lot of moments on here that are almost indecipherable,
in my
opinion. The
themes that this album talks about are
And like
really
you said,
too.
It's very, like, sad. Like, Cancer in the Water has the lyric, Cancer in the Water, the cancer in me. You get, like, the nods to conspiracies and, like, higher powers and,
kind of abandonment mentioned
love, and I think the more you listen to this, and I would just encourage you to listen even more outside of the show, because you're really going to start to notice the, like, there's songs that stand out, but you really start to notice things like Blood Barf and Let's Shoot Up and 1-800-Worship. And the cue, they'll start to stick out even more to you when you listen to the album. Like, and they become just as good as the other stuff. I think at one, like, my favorite is always changing on here. It's incredible. I love With No Fear. And I feel like it's the most underrated song in this whole thing. It's just this 6-minute, very, like, I love the vocal melody on this song so much. Just the way, and across this album, Clarence has this amazing delivery where it's this very accentuated, like, hyper. I love when things are taken to the point of hyperbole or absurdity. I love those weird R&B vocal melodies he does, but they're so far gone that without reading the lyrics, you really can't even tell what he's saying.
He's a great singer.
I adore his vocal melody. I love that, like, to take a phrase like, with no fear, and you can sing it kind of up, and he's like, with no fear, but he's like, with no fear. I adore the strangeness of the vocals on this album, like, to pieces.
I would agree that his vocal approach is very good. But one of my complaints about the album, and one of the things that makes it seem a bit overlong to me, is that he uses that same vocal approach like 90% of the
time. It's pretty much every track.
And it kind of, it makes me wish that he would change it up a little bit. You know, I do feel like...
I would argue you do get change up in...
A couple songs. You get it in Meadow Hopping. You get it in Will to Believe.
Right.
You get it in Cancer in the Water.
Not his vocal style so much as like the way... I think he understands that he's limited, and he kind of does this with delivery, like the meter of how he's reading stuff out. That would be my case for that, is I think he keeps it diverse by keeping the hooks so different. You know what I mean? And the same thing you're arguing more or less like on those songs.
But I did feel that, you know, most of these tracks structurally, as wild as they were, they're similar. These were created in similar ways, and the vocal approach is similar. That isn't to say that any of this is unimaginative or not well-written, because everything here is pretty great, but it does mean that by the end of the album, I've suffered from just a bit of listening fatigue. I'm kind of, like, tired by the end of it.
My one gripe is it's a slog. It is a real slog.
I disagree. I think this thing flows pretty well. It never feels too long.
I'm not saying it doesn't flow well. I'm saying that...
Like, it never feels too long.
For me, at an hour, by the time I wrap up, I'm like, man, like, I don't even want to listen to music after.
Like, your brain's just kind of... It's overloaded.
I've heard so much amazing stuff.
I don't know. I think it just... It feels like a great movie with a great climax.
It's weird because there's no overlapping theme on this thing.
It touches upon a lot of different
stuff. It's basically just sonically cohesive, like to a point where I think you tie a lot of the topics together. And this one is even tighter in my opinion, but like lyrically, it's all over the place.
All right, what'd you guys think about Porn Mountain? I've been wanting to ask this question.
Porn Mountain's great.
I like the HD
yes.
vocals.
Yeah, I think that's a moment that sticks out the more you listen to it. Because every time it comes on, I'm like, oh yeah, I love this moment. It's kind of hard to appreciate every track on here.
It's kind of subtly the saddest song on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, kind of funny and weird and wacky, but when you really get into that song, it's like, man, this is depressing.
Yeah, it's kind
of
sad.
That's one of those I had to listen to probably 5 or 6 times, because the first time I was just laughing through the entire track, and the second time I was like, okay, I need to settle down, like actually listen to it.
I'm going to give this album a light 8. I ended up loving it after 4 listens. I was thinking it was going to be a 7, but I did end up really enjoying this. I thought it was a very unique statement and just enjoyable all the way through.
I'm going to give this album a light 8 as well. Like, I had some, just in talking about it helped too. I just feel like sometimes it feels a little disgenuine, but it's so well put together and thought out, and just the moments where it's great are fantastic, especially like Cancer in the Water. You know, Veteran was an 8.2, but I probably won't come back to it. This I'll probably will come back to, with some tracks that I'll always enjoy really listening to. So that's what sets it apart for me.
I would happily come back to Clarence Clarity and listen to any of his other stuff. This album just really resonated with me for a bunch of really weird reasons. I'm actually going to give this one a solid 9. because I really, really enjoyed it. And it just, like earlier mentioned, it was like a movie, but it was way deeper than any movie I've ever seen. So it was a good one. I'd definitely listen to it again.
When we do albums like this that I love so much and are so recent in my mind, I kind of tend to talk a lot because I think they're amazing. And this is just another case of that. I think this is the first time I've maybe had a really big complaint about it, though, where it's like, it is a slog. It is absolutely a slog. I'm not always in the mood for this thing, and I can really cherry pick my favorite tracks, if I'm being honest. But when I do listen all the way through, it's super rewarding to hear the tracks that I don't always come back to by themselves. I'm feeling a decent 9. Clarence Clarity. No.
The album that I chose is the 2008 release by the band Elbow. It's the Seldom Seen Kid. And Elbow is one of many kind of British, it's hard to call them indie rock, but Radiohead, 90s alt rock inspired bands that come out of Britain around that time, come out of the UK, with this sort of atmospheric sound, with this very... I wouldn't say it has any rawness, it's very produced, this very lush kind of sound. Released a few albums, started in 2001, but this is their fourth release, and it does mark a bit of a departure from their earlier sound in that it has a very, very grand scale. This album has a lot of different kinds of instrumentation on it. You have full string sections where those were either rare or not found on their earlier releases. This album definitely is more ambitious. It's larger than life. It's really a production in the full sense of the word. But I will kick it over to someone who isn't Chaz to start us off.
Why? Go ahead.
Are you sure you really want to start with me on this one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh my god, if you don't like it either.
Ooh,
dude.
Is White on my side?
Go ahead, talk.
I'm very, very in the middle, and I'm sure this will change via discussion. First glance, I really, really like the, like you said, atmospheric sound. That's the same vibe I was getting, kind of like an earlier Coldplay vibe. I also really got like an earlier John Mayer vibe, sort of, and if him and Dave Matthews Band had a kid and it was a band, that's kind of the vibe I was getting.
Oh, 100%.
We've talked a little bit about the genre type. I would almost say this thing has a singer-songwriter quality to it, too, in terms of the lyricism and the song topics. I just came to that realization because I'm very smart. The huge singer-songwriter vibe on this thing.
I really liked the album. It had a really, really good sound. And as of now, I will reserve my complaints and I'll kick it over to Brian.
I wouldn't say I was floored, but like this thing is enchanting, and I kept coming back to it. I think the first two tracks are more or less flawless. If I had one nitpick about the first track, I think the horns coming in so early in the track and the instrumental buildup kind of take away from what they do later, but not so much.
I like
that,
how like, startling they are.
They are, but mm-hmm. See, but that's kind of a cheap trick for me. Like when they come in later in the track, like that huge building verse that what's his name?
Guy Garvey is the frontman of the band.
The huge, like, the staggering, like, size of the verse, like, right at the end of this thing, where he's just building and building and building, and then we get, like, 10 seconds. Darling is this love, and the horns again? Man, that, like, that moment only grew on me more and more. Like, I really enjoyed it when I first heard it, because I was like, okay, it's a little structured for my taste, but, like, I like what it did. Like, the more I heard, I was just waiting for it. Like, I love the way the horns build up to that moment over that verse. The second track gives me, and don't be mad, like, it reminds me of some post-grunge vocal melodies, which is a really weird comparison. Like, the way it kind of, like, walks through it, and I don't know, just the way it's the rhythm with which the vocals are delivered, the way they kind of walk with the track. I kind of enjoy that a lot. When we get into Mirror Ball, another great track, like, not too much to say about this thing other than that it's really beautiful. I love the sentiment on all of these tracks. It's referencing a relationship. With the first track, it's kind of like, you know, there's a lyric that's back of horse that's only good for glue. Yeah, amazing moment. And he's kind of, you know, saying like, hey, you know, he's showing that he's desperate for it. It's very much a one-sided love kind of thing. And with the second track, we get kind of him, you know, I love the lyric on this one about Rush is like the first cigarette of the day. It's a very stark contrast to him leaving the, you know, he's leaving this house. He's like, I love the rush. I can't move because I'm afraid you'll sleep. I'm afraid you'll wake up if I move my arm. Love that moment in comparison to the cigarette line. It's like him leaving, and then that ambition consumes him. I love the vocal passage on this thing where he's saying 5 years ago and 3,000 miles away or something to that effect. Yeah, wow, those first two tracks are pretty incredible, if I'm being honest. And then we get into Mirrorball, which is very good as well. Love the lyrics on Weather to Fly. Love the vocal line on that one, too. Love the vocal melody as well. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty stunning. Like, when this album's great, it really kind of does blow me away. My complaints are probably I think this thing runs a little long. Not because it's unbearable by the end, but I really feel like musically, not lyrically, the lyrics across this thing are pretty great. I can't name a lyrical moment that I was let down by or even just kind of about. But like a song like The Fix.
Yeah, I think that is the weakest point.
I don't need that. Why? I don't think that needs to be on this album. I understand they're trying to change it up instrumentally, but like topically, I'm so into the stuff that he's talking about with the relationship that like I really don't care about this track. And I like if it weren't the kind of lumbering, almost Tom Waitsy, in my opinion, kind of instrumental on this thing that's kind of intriguing, I want to skip this thing when it comes on, not because it's bad, but I'm just trying to get to the other stuff.
It's stylistically and thematically kind of contrasts with the rest of the album. Just in kind of a weird way.
Just a sore thumb, in my opinion. Not in a good way, either.
It interrupted the flow a little bit in my first listen. I was like, I got there, and I was like, wait, what?
Because imagine loneliness of a tower crane driver into some riot into One Day Like This, rather than having The Fix
right
in there in that mix. Like, that would be an incredible run of three tracks.
I can apply that logic to a lot of tracks on here where it's like, I'm not into the instrumentation. Like, Loneliness of a Tower Crane Driver, it's just, I love the grandness, but it's just a little too minimal for me. And I don't think it builds all that well into the end as well as the lyrics do. The verses build way better to the end than the instrumentation does, in my opinion. I know we're going for another huge, you know, like, just monumental, like a sound you could hear 20 miles away type of thing, but it just doesn't do it for me. And on some riot as well, just another one that's too minimal. And really, as we careen towards the end, the closer is probably my least favorite. It's probably the least memorable of any track on here, in my opinion.
Tisk tisk.
And the second to last track, the One Day Like This, I think.
There's a bonus track, We're Away. And
that's
then
the one I heard.
One Day Like, yeah. I have that.
I never heard the bonus track. Was not on my list.
It's kind of like a loungy piano ballad.
Never heard it. Didn't figure it was essential. Just kind of didn't go out of my way for it. But
I think it puts a nice stamp at the end of the album, and I think it fits musically and thematically because across the board, this album is romantic.
Yep.
But it's not. I would say it's not really cheesy because even though it does immerse itself in like an infatuation, it never seems like it is, despite the grand scale and the kind of lush instrumentation and all that, it never feels like it isn't grounded. I feel like there are a lot of moments here where both the lyrics and the vocals reflect a very self-reflective nature to this album.
Almost Isakov-esque.
Ooh, another one that I don't like, another one I do love that I always forget in the context of the album, Grounds for Divorce. That is a perfect example of changing the tone, and it's great. It's like a fantastic track. But my maybe second least favorite is An Audience with the Pope. I think this is the only moment on the whole album that I would dare to call cheesy. It's a little much. It's a little on the nose.
I do like the concept behind this. I
like the sentiment, like the humor in the track, but like it, man, I just struggle with it. It's a touch long because there's not a whole lot to this song. And I'm laughing at first. I'm kind of like, that's cute. And then we get to minute three and I'm kind of like.
Yeah, I would say Audience with the Pope and The Fix, even though I like them, definitely the weakest tracks here. I think every single other song on this album is pretty much fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic to flawless, in my opinion. Those two tracks do stick out, but it doesn't really take away from my enjoyment of this album as a whole.
Now, we've really put this thing on a pedestal.
Well, I haven't quite yet.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot more I want to say about this, but I'll kick it over to someone who wants to bring it down a few notches.
It's been so long on the show since me and you have agreed. Think about that. Since me and you have been like this hardcore against his opinion.
A new alliance has been formed.
All right.
Starlings. Sounds like run-of-the-mill Vampire Weekend. I like the song, but holy crap. The Bones Fuse, okay. Mirrorball, eh. Grounds for Divorce sounds like every Ford truck commercial bullshit for an iPhone. Hate it. An Audience for the Pope is okay. Weather to Fly is the worst song on this album because of just how annoying the vocalist is. Loneliness of a Tower Crane Driver, eh. The Fix, eh. Some Riot, kind of annoying. One Day Like This is the best song on this album, and Friends of Ours is a decent closer. I think the worst thing about this album is that I do not like the vocalists at all. I find him to be very annoying and repetitive and just grains on the ears, especially in Weather to Fly. Perfect weather to fly.
Is not what he sounds like.
That is exactly what he sounds like.
He sounds like British Chris Martin. Just about. Almost to a T.
Chris Martin is British. he has a northern British accent, and I think that I totally do not understand. I can't even conceive of your complaints, because I think that his vocals and his presence is one of the best things about this album and Elbow in general. I think his vocals are fantastic. He goes from very, very quiet and contemplative to very, very, you know, it'll build up and then it'll just be an explosion of sound, and his energy will match that explosion. Annoy? I can't even fathom.
So it just does not sound pleasing to me. And I listened to this album 4 times, and each time just got worse for me.
And you want mad respect?
Because it's just not pleasing to the ears for me. Because Starlings is such a decent opener, but once we go into the Bones view, I'm just kind of done. I'm already done. And this album just plods along. Blah, like, look at us, we're saying... Like, the lyrically, this is a pretty strong album. You know, I'll say that. But when sonically, you're just... It's so pretentious. Some of the most pretentious indie crap I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, man, I'm so torn right now. I love how, like, raw you're being, like, but, oh, f*** you. Like,
because, like, it's just this piano, you know, like... Okay.
You don't like that little...
It's so formulaic. It's like, we gotta have piano because we're an indie pop band, and it only works. It only works in Friends of Ours. That is the only time this album deserves to have a piano ballad.
I would really disagree with that. It adds so much chordal structure. It adds presence to what's being already played. It adds depth.
I don't think so. I think it's just so, like, we gotta have this because that's what we are.
I will say, the piano the little ding-da-ding that's on one of the tracks here, I can't quite remember which one, I like it, but it is a little manufactured for my taste.
The
I'm being
annoys
honest.
The crap out of me because he doesn't rhyme. He's inconsistent with his rhyme structure. He's like, for the fix is in. One time he rhymes in with the word before it, but then he doesn't do it the second time. I hate it.
I think that's exactly why he did it, just to make people mad.
And
I guess so. 8 years ago or something, he did it.
Grounds of Divorce annoys the hell out of me. I don't care if lyrically it's like strong or whatnot, but it just sounds like, whoa, it just sounds like so stereotypical. I've heard that before.
The thing is, consider when this album was released. That was not the big thing. The whoa, I get that complaint. If that kind of melody was released, you know, 4 or 5 years after this album, it would be, you said Vampire Weekend. Vampire Weekend's debut was released in the same year as this. They weren't around. Elbow is not, you know, taking all of this stuff from all of these. And it's not even indie pop. They're not taking all of these musical ideas from other artists.
This is
coming from them.
This is barely indie pop. It's pop music, in my opinion, but like, indie pop? No.
You cannot tell me that The Fix sounds like some indie, like, you know,
it doesn't. It's the least indie sounding song on this whole album.
I disagree strongly.
Have you heard any? Oh, you haven't heard any Tom Waits, right?
No.
This is a dead ringer for a Tom Waits instrumental, in my opinion. I think you would compare it to that more if you had heard some of that.
Okay.
But my point being,
it doesn't matter if they're creating this sound like in Grounds for Divorce. That would go on to release some just annoying, like, Hallmarket bullshit.
What about all the terrible synth pop that came after Kraftwerk? How are you going to justify your opinion that this album is...
What about Nirvana and post-grunge?
Yeah. You can't undo... Seether does not undo how great Nevermind is.
My point is that this is the beginning. I don't like the beginning.
Wow.
I just think that this... And it all stems down to the vocalist. If the vocalist was not annoying, this would be very different.
You really think he's annoying?
I think he's incredibly annoying.
It just because it makes the album just plot along.
What do you like about the album besides the lyrics?
What I like about the
album? Is there any instrumentation, any songs?
I love the violin. See, One Day Like This is my favorite song because that is the only time, the only moment in the album where I feel what you were feeling throughout it. Enchantment, like I was flying, like I felt what he was saying.
Well, it's Perfect Weather to Fly.
No! Weather to Fly is garbage! Perfect Weather to Fly! Ugh,
it's not. It is not garbage by any means. Thank you.
Sorry, Wyatt.
This is a crazy opinion. Man, I disagree with you so much right now.
But I listened, and I tried.
And you did, and you really did.
Each time I came back to it, it just got more and more annoying for me.
And we're proud of you for trying.
I got to get in, though. One Day Like This is a beautiful song.
Right.
Those violins, those
I think it's really pretty. It grew on me more. It was kind of, it was, I felt the way you feel about the whole album about that track. I was kind of like, this is a little too samey for me.
And Friends of Ours is pretty stunning. I love that melody with the piano.
I 100% agree with that.
It's a great closer.
I never was hooked by that thing, to be honest, you know?
Chaz. Guy Garvey's vocals make this band. Guy Garvey's vocals show an incredible just understanding of emotion. They're incredibly emotive. They're passionate. They're never pretentious. It never feels like he is pushing any kind of ideas or any kind of feelings on the listener. It just feels like he is expressing what he is feeling, and that comes through in both the lyrics and the vocals and the instrumentation. The instrumentation here is as far from dime a dozen as you could possibly get. It's incredibly lush. There's so many different just textures and instruments that are playing into this entire album, and they're composed incredibly well. The melodies are beautiful. The moments where it's grand and just larger than life actually come across very, very well compared to a lot of indie bands that would try to do that in the 2010s. There's so much music and indie pop and stuff, and this isn't an indie pop album again, but there are a lot of artists in this same vein that would try to sound really important and really essential and really crucial because look how larger than life we are. But you don't get that from Elbow because of how personal this album is. And the way that it is able to be personal is because of Guy Garvey and his vocals and his lyrics. There's never a moment where it sounds like they're trying to impress upon the listener just how great they are. It just feels like they're making the music that they want to make. It's just absolutely lush with these string arrangements and the piano melodies, just everything about this album. And
however, it does not need to be an hour long. This album is, song goes on too long.
I think it runs long, a little long, but it's mostly the last three tracks, in my opinion, that kind of maybe put it a little long.
But I disagree with that. I think every other song before it goes on too long. I think One Day Like Us and Friends of Ours are perfect length.
I am blown away that you don't like Bones of You at the very
every
least.
Bones of You is my favorite track.
A lot of these songs are meh for me. Song on this album justifies their length because the dynamics and the way that they build is fantastic. A lot of these songs will start out being relatively quiet and they'll build into this cacophony of noise, like The Loneliness of a Tower Crane Driver, or One Day Like This, or Starlings, where it starts out with this very quiet moment, and you think, maybe I need to turn it up. Maybe this song is you know, maybe I need to, this album is mixed quietly, and then the horns just blast in.
That's how they get you.
Mirrorball is this lush, beautiful melody. It just, I'm having a difficult time expressing my opinion because of how emotionally attached I am to this album.
Did you have a bad breakup when you listened to this album, Jacob?
This album isn't about a breakup.
No, it's not. It's
this album is a celebration of love. And the thing is, it doesn't do this in a way that's cheesy. It does this in a way that is relatable. Best lyric on this entire album is on One Day Like This. It's "Holy cow, I love your eyes." Because of the phrase "holy cow," you're not going to hear that in a standard run-of-the-mill pop love song. It's a real infatuation that is very human.
I truly agree. Lyrically, this is a pretty damn good album. It's just, good God, sonically, I don't vibe with it one bit. And that's what makes it so jarring for me, is that I can't listen to this guy's great lyrics because of just everything that he's putting before me. It just makes it so hard to get into.
So let me ask you this for the other two that are not Chaz. Was there a song over 9 minutes on this album?
There was not.
There was not.
I rest my case.
I mean, he pretty much destroyed you. I have praised this thing pretty highly, but there are, it is in the, in this is in the least worst case of this phrase being used, it's a, in my opinion, a bit of a mixed bag. Audience with the Pope is just okay, in my opinion. Some Riot and The Fix are, The Fix is actually good, it's just in the context of the album I struggle with it. I don't want to really hear it in the context of the album. Some Riot's okay, Another Moment is just okay. I just think the instrumentation is a little lacking here.
I thoroughly agree. Just
not really doing a lot for me, and I kind of, it's just, it's pleasant while it's on. One Day Like This grew on me immensely, but I still wouldn't call it one of, it's not even close to a favorite on here. And I just think the closer's a little sleepy for me. But I, you know, if those tracks are kind of eh at worst for me, like a Starlings and a Bones of You are, like, I, they're great.
I think it was by far my favorite, but it was my favorite off the album as well.
It's great. It's amazing. It's a really amazing track. That and Starlings and Mirror Ball and Weather to Fly. You know, can't say enough good things about those tracks to the point where they pretty much carry the album for me. And Loneliest of a Tower Crane, of a Tower Crane Driver. That's so hard to say. Loneliness
a bunch
of
a fake fans in the audience tonight.
Loneliness of a Tower Crane Driver is lyrically stunning, despite the fact that I think the cacophony doesn't really do as much for me as it does on other tracks. Mm-hmm. And lyrically, there's not a moment on here that even The Fix, which is about basically, The Fix is literally about fixing a horse race, as far as I can tell. So, like, or fixing some sort of event. Like, he's literally saying things like the Mickeys are slipped. So it's like, you know, it's clever writing still, but like, I really, real eyebrow raiser of a track on this thing in the context of the rest of the album. But I don't care. Like, it's really carried by like five tracks for me, and the other ones are just okay, but. I mean, like, all those tracks are so strong that I could really give this thing a light 8 and walk away happy.
I'll give it a solid 8.5. Oh. Just because I love music with atmosphere, and this just, it suited my taste really well. And, you know, there wasn't a song called Neon Mice, or it wasn't over 9 minutes. but, yeah, overall, like, it's singer-songwriter, atmosphere-y, John Mayer, Dave Matthews. Like, it's just, it was a good pick for me.
5.
That's it? That's all you got?
That's all I got.
You all know, you two know, that I am super into, like, do-it-yourself-sounding lo-fi stuff, amateurish-sounding stuff that sounds like it was recorded in somebody's bedroom. So this, you know, might seem like it is super, super far from what I'm normally interested in. But when I first heard this album, I listened to it 3 times in a row. And there was a period of several months where I would listen to One Day Like This every single night before I went to sleep, and sometimes in the morning when I woke up too. This thing, and I agree with the fact that Audience for the Pope and The Fix stand out in a negative way. I don't think they're bad, but I don't think they work well in the context of the album, but it doesn't take away from my overall enjoyment of this. I find that every single instrumental idea, every lyric, every melody is just beautiful, and that's the best descriptor that I could give to this thing. And the ambition on display here is extremely admirable, and it never feels overburdened, and it never feels pretentious, and it never feels like it's trying to make you believe how important it is. And that's because of Guy Garvey, and it's always been because of Guy Garvey throughout Elbow's discography. This thing is, it should have been like the last amazing gasp for this style. It should have been like the last indie album that came out with this grand sound before it became very, very formulaic and before it became run-of-the-mill, because it definitely did after this album. But this album is in a league of its own as far as that sound is concerned. And there was a time when this was like a top 10, and this thing is still very high up. Maybe not quite that high for me overall, but this thing gets a 10 out of 10. This thing, I can't give it any less. Maybe, you know, if I was going to average every single, you know, score every track individually and then take the average of the album, it would be like a 9 or something. But like Brian said, the amazing moments, and which for me are 90% of the album, they make up for any missteps that there could be. Next week, it is another sequel episode where we're going to be talking about albums by artists that we've already discussed on the show. My choice is going to be John Prine's second album, Diamonds in the Rough.
I'm going to be doing 12 Golden Country Greats by Ween.
Brockhampton, Saturation 1. We're going to do it. I think 3 might be a little more personal, but 1 is, like, I can't deny how great that record is.
This has been Unwarranted Music Opinions. I'm Jacob Lindberg. I was with Brian Courtney.
Hey.
And Chaz Jenkins.
Hello.
And guest Wyatt Melton.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, don't come back.
Will do. Thanks.
Join us again next time.